Strange Studies of Strange Stories.
And we are rolling.
Welcome to our extra credit episode, Dr. Moreau Goes to the Cinema.
Yes, this is Strange Studies of Strange Stories. We've been covering the novel The Island of Dr. Moreau all month on the podcast. Typically, we would discuss the adaptations as we're covering the novel, but there was just too much story. And we saved these films to be discussed on this bonus video episode. Speaking of too much, I am Chad Pfeiffer.
And I'm Chris Lackey. This is our live video episode for the patrons. So thank you so much for your support.
That's right. If you're listening, there's a link in your show notes to watch this video. If you're already watching this, but feel inspired to run off and create your own adaptation of The Island of Dr. Moreau, then listen to the audio version as you do so. Let's jump right into these films.
I thought the first adaptation of The Island of Dr. Moreau was the 1932 film called The Island of Lost Souls, but I was wrong, and not just wrong, I was doubly wrong.
What? Do tell. That was news to me when I read that in your notes here.
Well, the first adaptation was a French movie called Le Vide, aka Island of Terror, in a 1911, and it was silent, obviously.
Yeah, not a lot available about that one. I then went and looked it up. Filmed in 1911, as you say, I think released in 1913. It runs about 23 minutes long and was directed by somebody called Joe Hammond, which is an American pronunciation of it. Joe actually has an umlaut over the E, which I've never seen before. That is very metal. And apparently this person was a star of cowboy movies in France at the time and very famous, but that film I couldn't find anywhere. As far as I know, it's not available. What's the other one?
Yeah. Then there's a German silent film that came out in 1921 called Die Insel der Verschollenen, aka The Island of the Lost.
Yeah, and that is actually available on YouTube. Did you watch it at all?
I watched. I scrolled. I did a little skimmy through it because those silent films are sometimes very, very slow. That one was. But there are some cool monster costumes or animal men costumes in there.
Yeah, there is a human animal hybrid in there. I had to scrub around a little bit to find. That's what I was going right to. But we'll link out in the show notes if you want to go have a look at that. Despite these, there are really three major adaptations of The Island of Dr. Moreau on film that people know about. So let's talk about those three. You already mentioned one.
Yeah, well, the first talkie adaptation is The Island of Lost Souls, 1932. Charles Laughton as Dr. Moreau and Bela Lugosi, our beloved Bela, is the Sayer of the Law.
And this is often referred to as the pre-code version of the movie. And that's referring to the Hays Code, if folks don't know. That was a self-imposed set of industry guidelines for all motion pictures released between 1934, so a couple of years after this, and 1968. Mm-hmm. And the code prohibited profanity, suggestive nudity, graphic or realistic violence, sexual content. It's really hard to define what they mean by that, but definitely anything that mentions or alludes to rape, no way. And so by today's standards, you know, an episode of Hannibal or SVU blows these movies out of the water that are pre-code. But The Island of Lost Souls, it's fairly tame, you know, by modern standards, but it certainly suggests some pretty horrific violence as well as rape. So I can see how it might have shocked audience members at the time. I think that it's still creepy and deeply unsettling.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, it's really disturbing movie. For just not just in its content, but its atmosphere and its mood, and it really puts you in that situation where you feel like I'm screwed, everything's turning on me, it's getting worse and worse. It just really ups the stake. It's great. I loved it.
And the vindictiveness in the end when Bella's going to getting all the beast men to grab scalpels and do surgery on Dr. Moreau. He's little knives, get the little knives. You're like, oh man. And the screams, you know, another pre-code film that we've discussed before is the 1931 excellent adaptation of Jekyll and Hyde starring Frederick March, which has strong sexual content as well. On a recent viewing, also still unsettled me. And those are both Paramount films. Unfortunately, they don't today have the reputation or availability or renowned as the universal horror movies of the era, like Dracula and Frankenstein, also adapted from novels. But I'd say they're on par with those films. And it's, I think the people should seek them out if they can find them.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, The Island of Lost Souls, it's pretty faithful to the book. We've got Drunk Captain. The big difference is there's a love interest and then another love interest. So one human, one cat woman. All the adaptations we're covering here have the cat woman in it. Yeah. Every single one.
They do. And audiences love a love story. So it seems obvious that as a filmmaker, you would do that. But this character also solves an issue of adaptation. In the novel, Prendick is on his own. And so we, the reader, are the companion and get to hear his internal monologue, thoughts, reactions throughout the book. The Panther Woman takes the place of the reader in these adaptations. It's somebody he can talk to about what's happening. It's somebody he can discuss the themes with. It's somebody he can run across the beach with, which is the other thing that the Panther Woman does with him. All of his running away from the guys, she's on board with that as well.
She loves it. She loves it. Now, you were talking about how this film was naughty at the time. It was banned in many countries, Germany, the UK, Hungary, India, Italy, and even the Netherlands. It was too much for the Dutch.
Well, the folks in those countries were really missing out because I love the movie. H.G. Wells, who was still alive in 1932 when it came out, I don't believe he shared my love for this.
He did not. In 1935, Screenland magazine interviewed H.G. Wells, who stated, "Island of Lost Souls is terrible!" Exclamation point. And that his story was handled miserably, with all respect to Charles Laughton, who is a splendid actor, and others concerned in the making of the moving picture. "I must say that it was handled with a complete lack of imagination." Wells also disliked the film's emphasis on horror and how different it was from his novel. Again, I'm confused. Saying no subtlety was used in the creation of the dreadful atmosphere. "The whole thing was so ridiculously obvious that I must repeat, it was miserable."
Wow. Well, Wells is entitled to his opinion, of course. I know that he was enthusiastic about the prospects of motion pictures, but very protective of his own work. I can see that. I was going for something here, and you guys didn't do it. I think likely the vivisection was a big focus of the book. And even in 1932, he might have thought, why didn't you continue with that basic premise? Because, you know, in this movie, they're talking about ray baths and all kinds of science fiction stuff to get these things done. There's giant asparagus, one should mention, like really asparagus in the movie, which is a very funny touch. But I think it's really good on its own merits. The Island of Lost Souls is available as a Criterion release, so you can get the DVD or Blu-ray that way with lots of great extras. It's not easy to find on streaming services, so you do have to kind of seek it out. On the Criterion disc, there's an interview with the director, Richard Stanley, who was partially responsible for the 1996 version. We'll talk about that a bit later. And he hails this as one of the, well, as the best adaptation of the novel of the big three. But he did make a good point about it that I didn't think about that resonated with me, that it's a very typical American film. And his complaint is that American films quite often slip into the paradigm of being pro-democracy, with plucky heroes against an evil monarch or evil empire who enact revenge for being subjugated. And this movie does conclude, as I mentioned, with tiny knives, you know, the Beastmen all get together and get revenge on Dr. Moreau. And that's really, it's got a very, John Landis is interviewed on the Criterion disc as well. And one thing I always loved about his American Werewolf in London is how it just ends. When the story's over, we don't have an epilogue. Over. And the Island of Lost Souls, he might have drawn inspiration from this, because once Moreau is dead, they get on a boat and they're like, well, that was great, and it's over. You know, that's the end of the movie. It's very direct. The book doesn't have that pro-democracy angle. It's a little more about society in general. Moreau dies a little after the halfway point, and we're left to ponder, you know, how do we go on when God is dead, as you said when we were covering the show. So I think that Wells probably was a little disappointed about that. But these criticisms from Stanley and, you know, from Wells, again, they're not taking the film on its merits. if you just look at the movie and don't think too much about the source material, I mean, I think it's really outstanding. The director, the director Earl Kenton is remembered for doing B pictures mostly. If you're a Universal nut like I am, you've seen House of Frankenstein and House of Dracula. They're awesome because the characters are in there, but they're not good movies. No. So this one's a bit of a surprise because I think it shows some real talent. I don't know if this is him or his DP, but you know, it's visually very gripping. I think the sets are really cool. And it really makes great use, I thought, of long shots and close-ups. The long shots, you don't really get a good look at any of these beast men until you really get a good look at them, you know? Yeah. And so it's kind of shocking. And I personally feel that the special effects in this 1932 movie are better than in the other two movies, even though they had far less advanced techniques. I'm sure they were just using spirit gum and latex and masks.
Yeah. Yeah.
You disagree?
It's probably pre-latex even, because they used a lot of wax in their makeup effects and whatnot. The designs of some of that stuff it's amazing. They're in that Criterion collection. There's a little booklet that shows some of the early makeup stuff, and it's as good as anything you would see modern. However, I thought that the effects were pretty stellar in the 1990 version of the film. I thought those looked pretty amazing.
They're outstanding. I mean, it's really neat. My issue is that they look so amazing that when you see these creatures in the 96 version, there is no doubt that they are human animal hybrids.
Right.
In fact, they can't play the beat in the book where he doesn't know what's going on and thinks, are these like deformed people from this island, before he realizes what's happening. In that movie, in the 96 movie, when he sees them, hey, why are you making beast men out here? I mean, he just knows because there's no denying it.
You're right.
Whereas, you know, in Island of Lost Souls, when he gets on that ship, they're just hairy and strange.
You're right. It's more accurate to the book, where he's not sure that what's up with them. They just seem off. And then that is exactly what's going on. So,
And I believe that they cast people of odd shapes and sizes and muscle men and people with real amputations and deformities. So it actually, they had to do things without makeup. And that also adds to some of the verisimilitude. By the way, the name Prendick, and you said this on the shows, very difficult one for us to pronounce, obviously for the screenwriters as well, because nobody calls this character Prendick in the movies.
No.
In Island of Lost Souls, he's called Edward Parker, and then Edward Douglas in the 96 one. Like, they found the easiest, simplest names they could. There's a lot of hair. Also, if you look at Bela Lugosi's makeup, I mean, it's just like all hair. And that must have been so difficult to both wear and create, but I think that's another reason that it's, you can't really tell what anybody looks like. It's just all shaggy and weird and patchy. I love the cast. The actor playing Parker, pretty solid. Charles Lawton, who Wells,
oh my god, Lawton, so good. He just steals the show in that movie. He's so charismatic, and you believe that he would be a dude that would be able to control a large group of beast men. He's great.
He's great. And believe it or not, kind of an understated performance from Charles Lawton.
Yeah.
If you watch, a real favorite of mine is The Mutiny on the Bounty with him and Clark Gable. He plays Captain Bligh and is just so sadistic and awful. And man, do you hate him so bad when you watch that movie. Here, also very sadistic, but it's much more in a proto-hedonism bot kind of lascivious, perverted way. Kathleen Burke, not credited in the opening, and it just says, and the Panther Woman, you know, which I always love. We don't want to tell you her real name and destroy the illusion.
Charles Lawton is from Yorkshire, by the way.
Is he really?
Looked up his, I mean, obviously people, especially in the old days, when they moved from Yorkshire, they would get rid of their Yorkshire accent.
Also, speaking of Frankenstein, Bela Lugosi as the Sayer of the Law, he's not in the movie very much.
No.
But he's under a ton of makeup. It's a little surprising that he is, because he was offered the role of the monster in 31 Frankenstein and famously didn't take it because he didn't want to be under a bunch of makeup. So this must have been made around the same time. Just it was one or two shooting days and that was fine with him. I'm not really sure, but for having such a small part, he really makes a meal out of it when he says, "The House of Pills."
He does.
You go, oh man, Bela, you really, I mean, you're feeling that pain. When he says those words, it's because he remembers something absolutely painful that happened to him. And I mean, obviously, I love Bella, but I think he does a great job. A couple other cast notes, because I'm a nerd about this. The human love interest that you referenced, played by Layla Hyams. She's also in Todd Browning's Freaks. I don't know if you spotted that. She's excellent in both movies. So it's funny because she always plays sort of a vanilla character, but she's in these really avant-garde movies. And then Maling is played by the Japanese actor Tetsu Komai, who is in a really excellent William Wyler movie called The Letter with Bette Davis. I highly recommend that film, especially because you can see some Asian actors working just top of their game at a time when that was not appreciated. And it's almost like Wyler is getting them to do some things that are also very subversive. So I highly recommend The Letter.
The Letter, huh? All right, yeah.
Yeah, really good movie. Stanley Fields plays the drunk captain. Sadly missing from the other adaptations.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think it's such a funny character, and he really nails it. In fact, there's a scene later in Island of Lost Souls where he's dressed down for leaving the Prendick character on the island. And it's a really funny scene. It just goes on and on and on. It actually has a John Landis Werewolf in London feel to it. But I think it also, you know, he's a braggart throughout the film. And when he's in that scene in trouble, he gets very subservient.
Yeah.
And I think that the director is trying to say, hey, you know, the Moreau Beastman paradigm is happening in the real world as well, isn't it?
You know,
this guy's worried about going to the House of Pain himself.
It's shocking because when Parker gets thrown off the boat, the captain just freaking cold cocks him when he's not looking and throws him, physically throws him off the boat, as in onto the other boat. And it's a huge drop. It's like 10, 12 feet that he falls. And he could have murdered the guy. It was so intense.
The violence is intense. And, you know, in modern movies, we use a lot of editing to hide the fake connection when somebody punches. But they didn't ever do that in the 30s, which is why I really love fights then. It's just all played in a wide shot. So when Prendick punches the captain, I mean, he really punches him, you know. I'm sure they did some stage combat, but there's no cuts, you know. And it's the same when the captain lays him out and then throws. I think it's a dummy that hits the boat, but it made me hold my back.
It is definitely a dummy.
I was like, oh, God.
It's definitely a dummy, yeah.
So you said there's two love interests. You know, there's the Panther Woman and then the one he's going to marry, the fiance. There's also two drunk captains in this movie, because later when the fiance comes to rescue him, she is accompanied by a captain, and Moreau keeps over-serving him. And so I was like, oh my God, there's two drunk captains in Island of Lost Souls. This is amazing. Obviously, I love the movie.
That, yeah,
I could go on and on about it. As I mentioned in the episode covering the novel, the movie was a big influence on the band Devo. They have a song, Jocko Homo, where the chorus is, "Are we not men? We are Devo." That was like their first big track. But even I realized watching this, even their biggest hit that most people know Devo for, Whip It, is a reference to this movie. Charles Laughton makes a lot of having his whip. They comment on it. You're pretty good with that whip. And he's like, oh, yeah, I studied it as a boy in Australia. Last thing about the sexual content, that's really another big departure from the book. And I think I think that Wells said he didn't like the lasciviousness of the film, because the motivation for Moreau to keep Parker on the island is that he wants to see if the Panther Woman will fall in love with him and if they'll mate. And then later when the girlfriend shows up to rescue him, he says, well, maybe we won't have to do that. And he pretty clearly sends one of the beast men off to rape her.
Yeah.
So that's the salacious stuff. I think that Wells probably thought that wasn't in there at all. And you're kind of making this into a different thing. And there was also something else.
It was kind of, I mean, they did talk about sex in that and Prendick's, you know, looking at the beast women occasionally and thinking sexual thoughts about them. And yeah, sex was in there. I mean, it wasn't obvious and overt as it was in the movie, but still it existed.
Oh, and also the Puma woman is really in the book as well. I mean, that's what happened to the Puma that came on board with him. So they're drawing from things that are there already.
Yeah. Yeah.
Something else that struck me about that 32 version, and I mentioned it on the shows, was the expendability of men as a theme. That Parker isn't really upset. Well, I mean, he's very upset that this guy's making dog boys and chicken lads, but it's when he meets the Panther Woman, he says, you know, I could have dealt with it if it was just these 68 guys that you had turned into beasts, but doing this to a woman is just unforgivable.
Yeah.
Why is that unforgivable? Why is that a bridge too far, you know?
Yeah.
And it just made me then kind of spiral out and think about, you know, just war, all the people that are dying right now, that men just get sent into these battles and it doesn't really matter to people if they're of a certain age, if they die or not, mm-hmm. on a large cultural level. And that's its own form of like weird sexism, I think. And so that popped out to me as well. But anyway, that's Island of Lost Souls. I think obviously we like it and I hope folks will go check it out.
Yeah. It's the one on this whole list that I say, yes, go find it and watch it, because the rest of them are not great or okay, but this one is actually really good.
And so also a little topically before we move on, Guardians of the Galaxy Part 3 is out in the cinemas right now, and I haven't been out to see it yet. I love the Marvel movies and I like that series, but reportedly James Gunn was highly influenced by this film and the source material in the making of that movie. And I was like, oh yeah, of course, because Rocket Raccoon, what is he but a human animal hybrid? And so I think it gets into his whole origin story, and there's a lot of Island of Lost Souls in there. So so go check that movie out, because in its own way, it's an adaptation of this book.
Now there's another adaptation that I didn't know about called Terror is Man, from 1958. It's a black and white movie made by a Filipino American production company. Mm-hmm. The plot of this one is a guy gets shipwrecked on an island, but there is just one experiment. It's a panther dude. And Moreau's stand-in is called Dr. Girard, and he has a wife assistant named Francis. The protagonist falls for the wife because she's mistreated, and Panther Man causes a bunch of problems. It's not well received, so I just kind of read a little bit about it. I couldn't find any clips of it or anything like that. But the one that the joy that I found was have you watched it, the trailer to The Twilight People?
No, this is my first time hearing about it.
Oh my God.
What's The Twilight People?
So in 1972, it's a exploitation film. Pam Grier's in it, but it's before she got really famous. So she's just like, she's a Panther Woman, basically. But the protagonist is kidnapped and taken to an island where Dr. Gordon is trying to make supermen by combining them with animals and people. Which is a worthy pursuit as opposed to what Moreau was doing, because everybody wants Superman. The thing about the trailer is it's just like those exploitation films. It's super violent, lots of gore. But one of the best things in there is there's a bat dude who's got like really cheap wings under his arms. And then he's on like wires flying through the jungle a lot. And it's one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my life. It is so rad.
Oh, wow.
We'll put a link in the show notes. Just look for the trailer. And I don't think, I feel like I don't need to see the movie ever. The trailer gives you everything that you need.
So you don't want to see the trip, probably. Well, I love Pam Grier, though, so I don't know. Maybe I do want to do that. Okay, I'll watch the trailer and we'll link out in the show notes.
She doesn't seem to be too prevalent in there because they don't even name her in the trailer. You know, you can see her in there, but they don't say it in Pam Grier. So I think it's before she got to be a big deal.
Oh man, I love her movie Coffee. I do. I've seen it so many times.
Then we got the 1977 adaptation of The Island of Dr. Moreau.
This is the one that you knew from childhood, right?
Yes. Yeah. It was on, I feel like, TV a bunch, and I saw bits and pieces of it, but it's not very good. I rewatched it. It's pretty slow. It's got Burt Lancaster as Moreau and Michael York, Basil Exposition, as the protagonist, who I forgot what his name is in that.
Yeah. I don't know it's not Prendick, but yeah, I don't remember. Yeah. Although it made me laugh when the credits came up and it was like Michael York, Nigel Davenport. I thought, God, this is the most British sounding cast I've ever seen.
Yeah.
The whole thing kind of felt like an episode of Fantasy Island. I like Fantasy
A long episode of Fantasy Island.
Yeah, it was like the same sets, and it didn't have the kind of neat. It wasn't a film, it felt like. It felt like a television movie or something like that.
Yeah, it did. Moreau uses a serum in this one to turn a beast into men. Mm-hmm. So it's not too far away from the original. There's some bits, you know, where Moreau dies probably in the last, half hour, 20, like, so there's still a lot of fallout after Moreau dies. They even hoist, there's a scene where they hoist up his body and kind of have him marionetted in a creepy way, going, look, there he is, he's ascending, you know, he's not dead.
Oh, wow, that's right.
Which is pretty cool. There is a Panther Woman who Moreau says is, he picked her up, some weird stuff in there where it's like, oh yeah, she was being prostituted out when she was 11. Are you still interested in her? You know, like, as in, like, she's
as if it was painted her fault. Goods. Yeah.
Yeah. It was really off-putting and weird. But you find out that that's all a lie. But again, the movie doesn't do a very good job of this. At the end, her eyes are panther eyes, which I couldn't tell. This is only in the summaries that I was reading, because I felt like they dropped the ball on it. I'm going, well, what happens when people stop getting the serum is they turn back into their original forms, because at one point Michael York is given the serum and he starts beasting out. But then he reverts when he's on the boat with the girl escaping, and they show her eyes a little bit, but they're not like really obvious cat eyes. So I didn't even catch it. I thought to myself, I go, oh, she should have like looked at her hand like in Island of Lost Souls and saw that her fingers were becoming claws. And it's like, oh no, he lied. She's a panther woman and she's going to turn back into a panther. That's like the twist, horrible ending to it. But they do such a bad job of communicating that I didn't even know, rewatched it and still was like, I'm still not convinced that that's like actually what happened. But in reading about the movie, yeah, that was what they were supposed to communicate. That was because the music gets creepy, but she just looks like she's kind of tired.
Well, I missed it too because I fell asleep. You're talking about things that happened in the last half hour of that movie, and I got to admit, I don't remember them because I was in and out of consciousness, because it is kind of a boring movie.
It is. Even Hyena Man or Hyena Swine attacks. He's the big baddie in the end of that, that Michael York has got to beat, and there's this fight on the boat, and that's all in there. But by that point, I didn't care. You know, it was just on. So yeah, please skip it.
Lancaster even seems like he's phoning it in. I'm a big fan of that actor, and he's just so calm and sort of. He doesn't seem very evil to me, or I don't know. I felt like he could have made more of a meal. He should have taken a page out of Bella's book and said every line matters. but also the fact that Michael York turns into a beast man, I was pretty mad. If you go check out this movie on the streamers, they spoil that in the key art. So you see him and he's got a, you know, leopard face or whatever. Oh man, don't tell me that. That's the one cool twisty thing that you did in this adaptation.
It's different. It's different. Yeah. We have a gulf of almost 20 years of Moreau. We don't get any new adaptations of it until 1996. And that's the film with Marlon Brando as Moreau and Val Kilmer as Montgomery, which I remember enjoying sort of when I first saw it. And I rewatched it this month because we were covering it, and it was way better than I remembered it being. And in it, they've got also the Crafts Fruza Balk, who was a Panther Woman, because we got to have a Panther Woman in the movie adaptations. And she does that same job that you were saying. She's the one that he can talk to and that we can get his internal monologue of what's going on with him. But she's great in it. And it's pretty dark. Again, strangely faithful to the, I mean, there were scenes, I think when we were doing our show, I talk about, well, yeah, that scene was actually in that movie, which I didn't realize it was doing. So it's good.
So much has been made about this movie being a bomb that it kind of surprised me when I rewatched it that, you know, I liked it too.
Yeah.
I think that actually the problem is with the source material in that it is a very horrific story about mistreatment of people and animals. And there's a documentary called Lost Souls, all about the making of this 1996 film. And I highly recommend watching it. We're not going to get into all the ins and outs of it on this because you probably should just go watch it. And also it's about adapting The Island of Dr. Moreau and more about Hollywood and the filmmaking process and how difficult it can be. But one of the things that's highlighted in there is that when Val Kilmer was added to the cast, the budget went up. When Marlon Brando was added to the cast, the budget went up. So Richard Stanley had some really, I think, incredible ideas about how to treat the story that unfortunately they couldn't really do, because the more the budget went up, the more money needed to be made by the movie and the more palatable they needed to make it, and how that could be tank a movie, and that's the reason it's thought of as a bomb, because to me, this isn't summer blockbuster material. The animal men, when he kind of X-Men type exploits or show off their powers or do anything cool, like, they're just there to be mistreated and suffer. And who wants to hot summer day, you know?
No, no.
There's some other highlights from Lost Souls. You know, Stanley was kicked off the movie and replaced by John Frankenheimer. If you see it, Frankenheimer's got the director credit on the film. He snuck back onto the set because he didn't leave the island that they were shooting it on. He was like fishing and hanging out with locals and then ran into some of the crew and was like, "You guys are still shooting?" And they said, "Yeah." And they gave him a costume. So he's actually in the movie as one of the beast people, which is just one of the greatest Hollywood stories ever.
So bizarre.
And also what a crazy person Brando was. It comes off as very unlikable in Lost Souls.
Yeah.
And some of the things he was doing to tank the movie. But that said, I thought he created a pretty iconic version of this character.
Yep.
By leaning into his intolerance of the heat and having the sunscreen on and the hat that you put ice in and all these things that it still lives on, obviously, in the show South Park, because the character was so... He literally is a character on South Park.
He's really good in it. And as much as a terrible human being he was and a terrible person to work with, what he put on screen is pretty great. And so is Val Kilmer, who I also heard bad stuff about making that movie because he was a drama queen on that set as well. And he's got a great Montgomery. He's got a cool take on him. And it's really interesting. They do some neat stuff, like the idea that he takes a lot of drugs. You know, he's not an alcoholic like he is in the book, but he's like into psychedelics and all of these things. And he gives the beast people drugs.
Yeah.
To make them just to kind of make their lives a bit better because they're suffering. So there's a whole scene where they all line up and he gives them some medication for their processing, but he also goes, "Oh yeah, I throw in some psychedelics and some, you know, some Quaalude and stuff in there
Jimmy Hendrix.
It a good." Yeah. And it's really cool. It's some really neat stuff. And he plays him great. And even when Moreau dies, he does his Moreau impersonation. He does Marlon Brando's Moreau impersonation. You know, he puts on the makeup. He does the thing. It's really cool. There's some crappy bits to it. There's some stuff that doesn't quite make sense. But, I wouldn't run out and see it. But if you're a Moreau completionist, you got to give this one a try if you haven't seen it in 20 years or whatever. It's really good.
The first half of it is really solid. I think that there's a scene where Prendick escapes on a boat or tries to, and there are these weird CGI human rats on it.
Oh,
and
right.
That's about where things start falling apart. From that point on, the story gets a little more meandering. It's not quite as tight. And there are these groaners in there like, "Oh yeah, they're real party animals. And the doctor's more like a vet. And she's a pussycat." That really feel like the studio execs threw them in there for the trailer. Yeah. And it's got a weird, they're groaners, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, in the middle of it, actually, after that CGI rat bit, I paused the movie to go make some food and Heather turned on Ticket to Paradise, which is another movie about an island that has George Clooney and Julie Roberts. And I don't know if I probably legally shouldn't say, but also Chris Lackey's in that movie.
I don't know what you're talking about. That's not true. That's a
lie. You hear a voice that sounds suspiciously like Chris Lackey when they're on the airplane.
I can't say anything about that. I just, maybe it does sound a lot like me.
Yeah, it's a Chris Lackey impersonator if it's not you. But the weirdest thing about that was I'm making my food and there's a scene in there where they're all dancing to Jump Around by House of Pain. And I thought, gosh, I can't escape Dr. Moreau. And then I leave the room, I come back in. And they've got the groom, because it's about two young people getting married, and they've got him laid out, and they're filing his incisors down. His fiance explains, in their culture, they do this before you get married to make sure that you're separated from the animals. They need to file these fangs down. So, and I thought, oh my God, am I hallucinating this, or is this really in the movie? So even Ticket to Paradise has Moreau in it.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah.
There's one last sequel that I'll mention, came out in 2004. It's a Full Moon Pictures, so, you know, talk about exploitation, that's what you get. It's called Dr. Moreau's House of Pain. It seems to be set in the 1940s, strangely. In the trailer, they're in the city, and this pretty woman punches through a dude's head, like punches through You know, wow. You get a shot from the back, and her fist comes out of the back of his
head.
Oh,
man, that shot's ripped off from Coffee with Pam Grier.
There you go.
It is. And she's a shotgun in that movie, but.
Right. Well, she's a Panther Woman as well. She's blonde, which I thought was mm-hmm. weird that she's a blonde and a Panther Woman. But, you know, why not? And it looked terrible. It looked like one of those really low, low-budget Full Moon movies. And that's about it. That's all we got, really.
Except for we do have to mention, because we did allude to it in one of the episodes, there is a Diana Ross video from the 80s called Eaten Alive. That's the name of the song.
Oh, yeah.
We'll link out to it if you watch the movie. She's kind of doing her take on the Panther Woman. There's a Prendick-like character who's like, what's Diana Ross up to? And then she's got all the, I think, riding that Michael Jackson thriller werewolf Animal Man trend that was going on in the music video. With former Motown artists at the time. So we'll link out to Eat Alive. We'll link out to the silent film. We'll link out to this amazing trailer from the 70s that you were talking about.
It's so good.
So lots of things to investigate. And of course, watch Lost Souls. Please watch Island of Lost Souls if you can get your hands on it. And as an afterthought, you might want to check out the 96 one. Don't watch the 70s one. That's our recommendation.
That's it. There you go. Well, I want to thank all you guys. You are our high-end subscribers. You're the people that are making all of the magic possible. So this is just for you. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And we'll be back next month with some short stories. For now, that's all we've got. I'm Chad Pfeiffer.
I'm Chris Lackey, and you've been listening to and watching mm-hmm. Strange Studies of Strange Stories. Extra credit. Oh, no.
Strange Studies of Strange Stories.